This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome again to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 270. I miscounted on the last episode. That was 269, not 270. This one's really 270. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals. And my host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, it's been a few weeks, but it looks like the way things are lining up, listeners, we've got a whole bunch of content coming over the next several weeks because camp looks like it's going to happen. That's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a good thing. And I'm, you know, excited that we're getting hopefully back to some sort of normalcy. I mean, I know people don't like to hear this because of other issues, especially like the national anthem and the kneeling thing. But, you know, a lot of us, you and I are two of those people, use the NFL and college football, you know, as well as a distraction from our life. I mean, we are busy. We have chaotic lives. I mean, you have four children. I have five children. We just we're busy people with a lot going on, and it's nice for 4 hours on Saturday and 4 hours on Sunday to kind of get away from that and be able to enjoy football. And while it's not going to be the same, it's definitely hopefully going to be occurring at least in some semblance. So we can at least get the regular season. I guess that's where we're headed now, right? Like, let's just get to the regular season and get moving.
That's right. In this edition of the show, the bulk of it we'll be talking about is like we do every year. This is our divisional rankings show where we talk about the different positions and the different players and how the division stacks up against one another. But before we do that, we will get into some of the things that are going on with the Cardinals and training camp and give you an update on everything that's coming up. So let's go ahead and get started. The biggest news that we have is the fact that the preseason is not going to happen. The league has been insistent that they want to start training camp on time, which would be July 28th. And they've been in negotiation with the players. Now, if you don't understand labor disputes, the league is management and the Players Association is the union, and the league gets to determine, but that's they have the power to say when the league year opens, when things start, when to open their quote-unquote plant for work. And then the union's job is to make sure to ensure that they're putting things in place so that the health and safety is of the best, that they're getting the best case scenario for health and safety. There's major concerns without an off season, and so training camp is going to start on time as it looks, which is great news, but there will be no preseason this year. Instead, there'll be a ramping up period. What the players are looking for is basically the 3-week period that they have in phase one and phase two in the off season with exercise and drills. They want that to happen first before they get into, so it allows their bodies to acclimate. Then have a ramp up period where you have a few unpadded practices. Normally during the off season, they would have it would end up being 13 OTAs and mini camps, which are unpadded practices, and then they start the padded practices in camp. That leaves little time for games, and so it looks like the specifics are a little bit unknown right now as to what it's going to be, but this allows the players to have an exercise period, a non-padded period, and then a padded period, leading us to the beginning of the regular season. Rosters are expected to be to be 80 players until cut down. So we'll probably see some over the next week, 10 players being cut down from all the rosters. Those 10 players, as much as it stinks for them, aren't going to impact roster battles much for the most part. That said, rookies were set to report this week on Tuesday across the league, and the Arizona Cardinals included. They announced Wednesday that all of their rookies are now agreed to terms. They are now under contract. So from my perspective, it looks like while there are still concerns, we are trending towards actual football. There are health and safety procedures that are being established. There's not going to be a preseason. But we are trending towards ultimately what we want is playing football games, which means money for the players. They get paid. It means TV revenue. So looking for forward and for everyone involved, it means you get to watch football. People like us who write and talk about football have content to do, and it really gets the ball rolling. And I am super excited about that.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of talked about it, the idea of who this affects. I mean, we're talking right off the top of your head, you're talking the extra kicker that they usually bring in, or punter, and maybe the fourth or fifth quarterback that they usually have on the roster. So those guys are all gone. Probably, you know, one of those kind of
the fourth string running offensive line unit that they would use in the last half of the fourth quarter of the preseason games.
Yeah.
All those guys that would be playing in the fourth, in the second half of the fourth preseason game. Those
right.
Guys
the West Hills, or I'm trying to think of who the last couple of years have been those running backs that have been, you know, even Kerwin Williams, you know, getting those carries in the fourth preseason game. Those are the guys that are not going to be on the roster right now. And as long as the NFL allows for expanded practice squads, which I'm pretty confident is going to occur.
And that was already in place this year. The practice squad per the CBA was going to be 12 players, and two of them will get bumped, will become active roster players Thursday as of the last couple of days of the week. And so they will build their active list based on this. I think it's 47, I think, on game day.
Yeah, 47.
It's 47 on game day because you get an emergency lineman, but you have two extra guys on the 53-man roster every week, which gives them, you know, a little extra cash.
And so, you know, you just look at it. It does suck because I know people always say, like, oh, you don't get paid for preseason. That's not true. Everybody just gets paid the same in preseason. So
they get a mild stipend. Like we wouldn't sneeze at it, but compared to NFL money, it's
right.
It's something, but it's not a lot.
For those end of the roster guys, it does, you know, it does suck in that sense of that is one paycheck that they're going to lose, or four, I guess, technically. But, you know, right, as far as positional battles, things like that, I mean, the only thing it does is it takes a guy that's at, you know, that the 82nd, 83rd guy on the roster that has a great camp. Maybe the Trent Sherfield type of guy that shows out really well and is able to become a guy that makes an NFL roster. So, but overall, I mean, I've said all along, I think the biggest thing, and you know, you talked about signing all the rookies. I think the biggest thing is I don't know how many rookies are going to have an impact in the NFL this year, outside of maybe like running backs and then special teams guys. Like, just the nuances of the game and how hard it is to pick up, you know, professional sports in general, and now you've taken away basically their entire learning off season. You've taken away padded
game
practices,
reps.
And now
so they're losing practice,
all,
and you're taking away game reps too.
Yeah, and so it's hard to see any rookies having huge impacts. Like, it's not that they're going to not have any impact or not play or things like that, but I mean, you and I talked about, in April and May, Isaiah Simmons was going to have a steep learning curve. And now it's like, what can you even expect for an Isaiah Simmons this year? I mean,
you put him in and kind of, he's going to play in the nickel and dime spots, and you're going to kind of hope that in Bruce Arians terms, you're going to give him cat coverage on the tight end. You say, see that cat, cover him.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, is like, it's so different now. And you've got less teaching time, you've got less reps time. So, I mean, those are the hard things. But overall, I think as long as you get game one, for the Cardinals, especially where they just felt like, especially on offense, that continuity was so important. It's just it makes sense at this point to expect them to maybe be a little sluggish, but pick up where they left off, as opposed to other teams. I mean, you look at like the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, could you imagine, or could you imagine if this was the Cardinals this time last year? Like Cliff and Kyler.
And to be honest, they kind of did it this way because they had their off. They basically learned an offense and then unveiled the actual offense.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I mean, it sucks. It sucks for fans. I mean, this time of year, typically when we're doing our camp preview, we're talking about what practices to go to, you know, when you want to get there, like, you know, make sure you're which weekends you're kind of taking off, or if you're going to take some time during the week off, when to go. I mean, we have none of that now. And even for you and I mean, we were talking about it before the show. As far as previews go, we're talking in all hypotheticals at this point, because we're not going to see anything.
We have no insight this year. We'd have no insight into camp this year because we didn't have a chance. Like a guy like Damir Bird last year, who there were hints of it in the offseason because he was practicing with ones. We have no idea if Johnny Dixon is that guy this year for the Cardinals or not.
Yeah, and so it's just, you know, it's awesome that they're taking the precautions to, I guess, ensure as much as they can a 2020 NFL season, but it also, for a fan perspective right now, it's hard to kind of look at the two sides. I mean, you definitely understand it's for the greater good of like, hey, let's have an NFL season. But at the same time, you're like, all right, so instead of getting excited in July and August, I will now wait until the second week of September to hopefully start getting excited about the 2020 NFL season, because nobody's going to have any idea what's really going on.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to start with our divisional rankings show, and first up are the teams overall, the quarterbacks, and the running backs. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and now we're going to start talking about ranking the NFC West at different areas. Let's talk the teams overall. I think we can probably say that, would you not agree, that San Francisco enters this year probably still the class of the division, especially that they played last year. They do lose DeForest Buckner, but they still have a fearsome pass rush. They have questions at receiver, but they still have that offensive scheme, and their defense should carry them. So I still think they are clearly the class of the division. Would you disagree with that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're talking about maybe the class of the conference. Great defensive talent. what we're hoping to see in Cliff Kingsbury in a, you know, maybe potentially unique and once in a generation offensive mind in Kyle Shanahan. Obviously there are some limitations of their offensive skill, and that lost them the Super Bowl in 2020, I guess is what we'll call it. But, you know, if your limitations are a Super Bowl loss, I think a lot of teams and and fans would kind of be okay with that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think
after the San Francisco, I think now the three teams I think are fairly close, but to me, you still have to put the Seahawks at number two, if for anything else, because they have one of the best quarterbacks on the planet in Russell Wilson. They do have some defensive concerns. The offensive line is one of the weakest in the division, but they seem to get the job done because they've got a good running attack and they got some pretty good talented receiver and they've got really good tight ends. So I still think while the Cardinals are approaching them and the Rams are the Cardinals and Rams are kind of there, I still think Seattle is a clear number two to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when you have the best quarterback in the division, it makes it tough to be a bottom half of the division type of team.
Which takes us to the Cardinals and the Rams, and this is tough. I'm not sure if it's just my optimism. I'm viciously optimistic almost all the time. I see things more positively. I'd like to think that the Cardinals could be above the Rams, but especially since they've lost, I mean, their offensive line wasn't as good last year, so they digressed. They lost some stuff there. No longer do they have Todd Gurley. No longer do they have Brandon Cooks. They lost Corey Littleton. They lost Clay Matthews. They lost Dante Fowler. And so they've lost key big contributors, and yet the way they played offense down the stretch makes you think that that offense is still very dangerous and that a step back in defense still might have them ahead of the Cardinals. I'm not sure which way I'm going to go. I think they're going to be really close, but I think I'm going to put the Cardinals just ahead because I believe in the offense taking off, and I think this defense is going to be okay. And with that, I think that offsets. I think that even though they've got the best defensive tackle on the planet in Aaron Donald and one of the absolute best cover guys in Jalen Ramsey, they've got weaknesses on the edge and in the middle of their defense, and I think that might keep them from being better than they are. But they have the talent to be every bit as good as the other teams.
Yeah, and I look at the Cardinals, and I'm with you. Like it's that flip of offense defense. Like I think you much like Russell Wilson, you have Aaron Donald, and you okay. Well, as great as Chandler Jones is, Aaron Donald is having a run that is, you know, usually not seen in NFL history, and so. That's the question. Is the Cardinals offense ahead of the Rams defense enough or vice versa to where you have it? Like who do you have more faith in? And so I think right now I lean towards the Rams just simply because the Rams offense has done it before. Now there's no Todd Gurley, as you talked about. There's a lot of changes in that offense overall, but I think with the Rams defense and the fact that we've seen the Rams offense be good versus I expect the Cardinals offense to be better than the Rams. I expect the Cardinals offense to be better than the 49ers. I just don't know if I can expect the same thing from the Cardinals defense or more from the Cardinals defense to get them above the Rams. But I think you're right. I think it's a coin flip, and it really just comes down to do you prefer the Rams defense or Cardinals offense, or who do you have more faith in taking a step, the Rams offense or Cardinals defense?
quarterbacks, I think we can agree Russell Wilson is the top. He's clearly one of the best quarterback. You can make the argument he might be the best quarterback in the NFL. You can make that argument. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes kind of takes the cake, but he's been doing it for a long time. Fantastic. But 2, 3, and 4 between Jimmy Garoppolo, Kyler Murray, and Jared Goff, that's a tough ranking for me because you've got the rising star in Murray. You've got Garoppolo, who no matter what, there's questions about him, and Jared Goff, who slipped last year. He still was pretty clutch, but he turned the ball over at a much higher rate than he had before. He wasn't as productive, and he did not look nearly the quarterback. In a great pocket rhythm in 2018, he looked as good as any quarterback that there's been. But because his line was not as good, he was a little more erratic. And the way I ranked them when I published my rankings, I went with what Jimmy Garoppolo did at number 2. I didn't quite believe Kyler should be there very soon as the number 2, but I'm putting Jimmy just above Kyler for right now and just above Jared Goff as well because he proved a lot of people wrong. And while he wasn't Patrick Mahomes, he still was good enough and productive enough that they were competitive in the Super Bowl, and as part of the loss was because he didn't make big throws down the stretch, but he has made big throws throughout the year. So he's more than Alex Smith, but he's definitely not Patrick Mahomes, but I still put him at number 2 right now.
Yeah, and I think number 2 is actually Murray at this point. You know, I go off of a couple things. One, I think the overall scheme and talent was in favor of Garoppolo last year. And, that was probably the best you're going to see out of Jimmy Garoppolo, which was really good. So I don't want it to be taken that way. But then you have Murray, who had not great talent, was learning the scheme against NFL defenses and had the season he had, which, I mean, probably unfairly, we expect to be the worst of his NFL career. And so for that reason, I would say Murray too. The other reason I say that is because my buddy that works, we'll say covering the 49ers, I guess is the best way to put it. Yeah. He would prefer Kyler Murray over Jimmy Garoppolo. And so if people that are close,
that's actually a good way to go about it.
If people that are close to the 49ers are like, we'd rather have Kyler, then I'm going to go that way too.
So who do you have at number 3? I've got Kyler number 3, but it's very close. And I'm waiting for that. For me, Jimmy, like last year I had Garoppolo as my 4 in the division, but he proved me wrong. And so I'm moving him up to number 2 with Kyler biting at his heels. Where do you keep Jimmy and Jared Goff at this point?
Yeah, I think Jimmy's got to be 3. Just because of the what have you done for me lately, that's what I would say. If you're just basing it off of best seasons, obviously Goff would probably be 2. But just in general, I think right now it's got to be Jimmy at 3, and then unfortunately Goff bringing up the rear.
This doesn't mean that Goff is chopped liver because all 4, like Kyler, we believe is going to be a star. Russell Wilson is a star. Jimmy Garoppolo took his team to the Super Bowl, and so did Jared Goff. Those are 4 very good quarterbacks in the NFL. So this isn't like some divisions or in years past when we're ranking the quarterbacks and you're like, you've got Russell Wilson, you've got this guy, this, and then, you know, John Skelton.
Kevin Cobb or
Derek Anderson or or who, Blaine Gabbert. Or...
Yeah, Mark Brunell and, you know, the guys that were in San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, Blaine Gabbert, you said him too. I forgot he was in San Francisco too. Oh, man.
Oh, that the summer Blaine Gabbert. Now, running backs. Now, this, if we want to look at a duo, I think, you know, that this is an interesting, if you want to look at who's got the best pair, because you could go with Seattle 1 with Carlos Hyde, well, Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde. Both, like, Chris Carson rushed for 1,200 and Hyde for over 1,000 for the first year in his career. Or you could go with San Francisco, Raheem Mostert with his fantastic play down the stretch, Tevin Coleman. You could go with Kenyon Drake, Chase Edmonds. And I think we're going to be in agreement that the whatever duo is in L.A. is the bottom of the group. You got Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers, or Cam Akers and Malcolm Brown. They are the unknown after Todd Gurley. Which duo would you rather have? Would you? I'm thinking, for me, Carson Hyde has to be the top.
Yeah, it's tough because I don't think anybody in their right mind would take, I guess it's Mostert and Coleman, right?
Yeah, the McKinnon will be in the mix this year if he doesn't get hurt again.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody in their right mind would take Mostert and Coleman unless they were on San Francisco. And so I think that's the hard part, is because when you look at it from just a talent structure, I think you're right. Seattle's one. I mean, you could make an argument that Arizona's two, but I would probably give it to San Francisco. But you also have to reason with the fact that, you know, San Francisco has undoubtedly the second best running scheme in the NFL after the Baltimore Ravens. The thing is, last year, Cliff's was what, 3 or 4? And so, so you're talking about two of the best innovators in rushing offenses in the NFL. And so, is Kenyon Drake that much better than Raheem Mostert or Tevin Coleman? I don't know, but I know that he and Chase Edmonds in a scheme is really good, and I know that Mostert and Coleman in a scheme are really good. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess I'd give it to the 49ers just because of their overall production.
And will you also look at this? It doesn't seem to matter who's in that lineup, kind of like the Denver Broncos of the 90s. It didn't matter who they put in there, they produce.
Exactly, and that's the hard part.
Now, if we're talking individual running backs, I'm putting Chris Carson at the top because he's got longer production. I think Kenyon Drake could threaten, but I think Kenyon Drake, I think, is a clear number two, and I put him just over Carlos Hyde because Carlos Hyde's starting to get long in the tooth. I go Carson, Drake, Hyde, and I don't hit, and then after that, I don't even hit Raheem Mostert until number 4, and so, and even then, I can't remember if I put him number 4 or number 5, because he's 31 years old, he's only carried the ball more than 15 times in 2 games in his career. Almost all of his career carries came last year. And while he's perfect for that scheme, you know, you're talking of who's a flash in the pan in the second half of the season, more or less.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. I think from a talent perspective, you have Carson and then you have a bunch of other guys that have to prove something to you. I mean, Mostert had a really good year, but again, it wasn't a full season. Drake, same thing. And Cam Akers is a rookie. I think
Akers is going to be good, but
right. It's just hard. And again, we haven't heard anything about him in camp because, well, there's been no camp. So we have no idea kind of how he's picking up the offense. You know, is he going to get the bulk of the carries, or
because Daryl Henderson was supposed to be that last year, right? And he didn't do anything.
So I would say, you know, it's Carson, and then I think Drake Mostert again would be a coin flip. I would take Drake at this point just because I think he's produced on a worse offense in Miami and on a good offense in Arizona, where Mostert's only produced when San Francisco had a great rushing attack. So I think that that would be my reasoning. I'm not saying it's right. So if you want to say, oh, Mostert's better, I'm not going to argue with you, but that's my reasoning. And then Akers is just last because, again, he's a rookie that we have no idea what's going on.
Right. And, you know, if what we see in Seattle, Seattle actually has, they have two starting caliber running backs that can be a number one on any team. San Francisco, they have three number two backs, three complementary backs in McKinnon and Tevin Coleman and Mostert. None of them have ever been really the guy. Drake was given the opportunity for the first time. And so you've really only got, if you look at their careers, Chris Carson's a number one, Carlos Hyde's a number one, and Kenyon Drake looked over the last eight games like he is a number one, and he was just needed to be unshackled. Crazy enough. That's really kind of weird in the division. And I think Cam Akers will be a number one. But a bunch, pretty much everyone else, they're complementary backs.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I mean, to this point, even Mostert and Drake were really complementary backs that just had to step up, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Carson's the only, like we said, Carson's the only guy in the NFL. Obviously, Cam Akers. I mean, we talked about Cam Akers coming out and that he, I really do think he has potential to be a very special player in the NFL. When you kind of go back and look at what he did at Florida State with the offense that they had, it was very special when you consider just how bad the talent was around him. But we've seen sure things just not make the impact, especially early in the NFL, that we expected. So I just think, you know, right now it's hard to rank anybody or rank Akers above anybody else.
Come on next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to other skill players. We'll talk receivers and tight ends. That's Cut on next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the receivers. We're going to talk about the tight ends, which makes for an interesting group. If you're talking about a trio of receivers, and then if you're talking about individual receivers, this is where the Cardinals take it. I think the way the rosters stand right now, the Cardinals have the best receiver in the division in DeAndre Hopkins because he's arguably the best receiver in the NFL. And I think they've also got the best trio as well, between Hopkins and Fitzgerald and Kirk. Whether Fitz is two, Kirk is three, whether Kirk is two, Fitz is three at this point at the career, we'll see what happens with that, because Kirk, when he was healthy, was a staple, was a go-to guy in the Cardinals offense. And I like the fact that pretty much when you're looking at the Cardinals right there, they have the best one and the best three. Like, they've got the best number one receiver. If we're talking Kirk, I think by far they have the best number three receiver, and Fitz is a legend.
Well, and that's the thing is, if you say Fitz is the number two, then that makes Kirk the three. And yeah, who would be a better three than him? If you put Kirk as the two and Fitz as the three, who would be a better three than Fitz? So, right. So that's the thing is, either way you spin it, the Cardinals have the best one and best three in the division. They don't have, you know, they're not going to be better than, at this point, better than DK Metcalf or, I mean, Debo Samuel looked like he was turning into a good player.
That's the thing is, Seattle's got two really good ones. Their third's a question. The Rams, they've got two really good ones. Their third's a question. San Francisco has One good one, one promising one, and then their receiving core is a big question.
And so that's, I mean, that's what you have. So I would agree with that. And I think until proven otherwise, there's not a really a question that DeAndre Hopkins is the best receiver in the NFC West.
Who's the next best receiver, do you think?
I would probably give it to Tyler Lockett at this point.
Same.
It's hard. I mean, you can make a case for DK. You can make a case for, well, that's, those are probably the only two that you can make a case or a case for right now.
I even have DK. I think the Rams with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, I have them in at 3 and 4 because they're more consistent. DK, I think, could pass them, but I think I put DK at, in fact, I can't remember. Did I put DK above Fitz? But I had Lockett and I had Woods and Kupp next after that, after them, because, but the one thing about the Rams this year, what they don't have, they've got two very solid, consistent players, but because of the way they play, neither Woods nor Kupp is like your dynamic player, like when they had Brandon Cooks. The Cardinals have dynamic in DeAndre. Seattle, Lockett is dynamic. Metcalf looks like he is close to being dynamic. And then Deebo Samuels looks like he's there right there. I actually, with Deebo, for me, I kind of have him a little above Christian Kirk. They're kind of, to me, almost the same guy, but Deebo was healthy and was given that opportunity with a good offensive scheme, while Christian, they actually kind of thought that he could be that sort of player. But talent-wise, I think he's right there on par.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And so, you know, you just have – I think you have two complete receivers right now in Hopkins and Lockett in the NFC West. And then you have a bunch of guys that are – like you said, they have roles. And then you have a couple guys in Samuel and potentially Kirk that you're looking at to take the next step. I mean, heck, we could even put Metcalf in that.
Yeah.
Group right now of like three guys that could potentially be, you know, jockeying for the third position in the NFC West. And so it's just, yeah, I mean, I think you've got a lot of talent, but I think number one and two are kind of there with a bullet, and then it kind of settles in after that. In fact, I know we're going to talk about the position. I would even go on to say that you have DeAndre Hopkins and then George Kittle and then Tyler Lockett. And that's not a slight to Tyler at all.
That's just how good Kittle is. He's incredible.
So,
but yeah. And then obviously San Francisco is going to be banking on Brandon Ayuk. The rough part being a first round pick, being a rookie, being an Arizona State guy myself, Brandon Ayuk is a guy I'm super high on. It's interesting because his 40 time, what we talked about leading up to the draft, was kind of disappointing. But, you know, San Francisco does some other things in terms of measuring speed. They don't just look at the combine. They use GPS speed and use GPS with game film to see what the top speed is, and they see him as an elite game breaker. So if he can, especially since it's going to be rough because it looks like Deebo's going to be out for the first little bit of the season with that foot injury, Ayuk could be thrown into a number one role right away, and that could be good, or that could not be good at all for the 49ers this year.
Yeah, and that's the tough part is that you've got people kind of chuckle or kind of got indignant about the amount of draft picks the Cardinals have invested at wide receiver, but when you look at the division, I mean, that's really kind of where all the teams have invested in wide receiver, and nobody's really invested more than the San Francisco 49ers at the wide receiver position.
They just haven't had the payout.
Yeah, they just haven't had any payout yet. And so that's, you know, and you can say the same thing about, you know, the off-ball linebacker position with the Cardinals. I mean, no team in the division has invested more in the draft than the Cardinals at that, you know, kind of inside linebacker position, and they just haven't had the payoff. And sometimes that's how it works, or doesn't work, I guess, is the better way to put it.
The tight end position is interesting because you have San Francisco. I without a doubt, George Kittle is the best tight end on the face of the planet. He is incredible as a pass catcher, as a run after the catch. He blocks very well. I don't think that you're going to get any argument. Kittle is numero uno when it comes to tight ends, and as Seth said, he's probably the number two receiver in the division, even ahead of Tyler Lockett. Now, while they have the best one, Seattle has quite the stable of tight ends. And so while they've got Kittle number one, I think for the Rams, I think I'm gonna put Tyler Higbee with how he played down the stretch. It was a historic run, and you might see they incorporated the Rams the tight end position down the stretch, and it was something scary with the points. So you might see Tyler Higbee right up there, kind of with George Kittle in terms of numbers, not like equal, but kind of in the same range. But Seattle has three very good tight ends. You've got Greg Olsen. He's a legend. He's still productive. He's not George Kittle by any means, but he's still one of the better tight ends in the league. You've got Will Disley, and you've got Jacob Hollister. That's a really good group of tight ends. I was doing the preview with the Seahawks guy. That's why that third receiver isn't necessarily a big deal to Seattle, because they run a lot of two tight ends, and when you've got Greg Olsen and Will Disley, that's fantastic. The problem is Will Disley has played 10 games in 2 years, and he looks fantastic when he's healthy, but he's had two big injuries so far.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where you're at, is that you have Kittle, you have Higbee as kind of the two true tight ends, and then you've got a bunch of guys that have never put it all together for a full season. You mentioned Disley. I mean, Greg Olsen has obviously put it together for a full career. We're talking about a potential Hall of Famer, but you know, he's also on the Larry Fitzgerald's side of his career, as opposed to, you know, still
and
being
literally has his job lined up with Fox.
Yeah,
when he retires,
he has his next career already booked. You mentioned Will Disley. You skipped over another guy in Los Angeles, Gerald Everett, that they've spent a high, you know, that they spent
he's
a high draft pick.
He was supposed to be really good. He reminds me of every top Cardinals tight end they've ever talked about. He's Rob Housler, Ricky Seals Jones, and Dan Arnold all wrapped up in one.
And so I think when you rank, if you're saying the starters, I would say it's, you know, obviously Kittle and then Higbee. I think you would put Olsen as three and then probably Max Williams as four. But if you're just ranking talent, you could probably slide Disley in front of both Olsen and Williams. But, I mean, are you going to get more than half a season from him? Because right. We haven't seen that before.
And Williams, in terms of Pro Football Focus, I don't love grades because they're not, to me, quantifiable. He was a really good blocker. The Cardinals raved about Max Williams and his fit. And they consider him a complete tight end. They just don't throw the ball to him. 15 catches is what you got out of him. And he's never been a high-producing receiver, but he fits the offense well. He can catch the ball, and he's very good in the running game and if he's asked to block in a passing down as well. But in terms of overall, I still had him, and I think I probably valued the pass catching a little more. And I think I put him around six or seven.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on that. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know where you put these tight ends that haven't produced or played consistently. Especially, I mean, especially as it's becoming a position that is counted on more and more.
Right. And this is why, Cardinals fans, and as much as Dan Arnold was exciting last year than the last couple of games, I am tempering all my expectations for him because he is the second tight end. And I, with the receivers that they have, why are they going to take three receivers off the or take one of those receivers off the field? And frankly, we've heard this story before. Ricky Seals-Jones was that guy and was highly disappointing. So I'm tempering my expectations for Dan Arnold. It'll be great if he does things, but I don't expect more than, you know, 20 catches from him, 20 to 30 catches over a full season, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know where you're going to get the catches from. That right. That's kind of, I mean, who are you taking it away from? That's always my thing is when you talk about players and those type of things. I mean, when we talk about George Kittle, he's the top receiver. When you talk about Will Dissly, he's the clear number three receiver. When you talk about Tyler Higbee, you can argue that he was their number two receiver last year. Max William, Dan Arnold, I mean, any of those guys, let's throw in, what is it, Dylan, whatever, Coulter, what was his name? Cantrell. They are the fourth target right now. At best, and that's not including Kenyon Drake in the passing game. I mean, you're talking about the fourth target and probably the fifth if you factor in Drake. I don't see where the numbers are going to be there. You might see a guy that has 25 catches and 7 or 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see that where you've got a guy that has – you know, an absurd amount of touchdowns where he's, you know, catching a touchdown every third catch, every third catch. But I just don't see how it's plausible to get him over 50 catches unless there's injuries or that factoring in.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, of us, our Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the trenches. We're going to talk offensive linemen, and we're going to talk about the defensive interior. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Offensive linemen, if we're just talking left tackles, we've got three really good ones. That's Trent Williams in San Francisco, Dwayne Brown in Seattle, and Andrew Whitworth, although he's going to be 39 years old and coming off having COVID this offseason. And then, as much as I love DJ Humphreys, he is clearly a bit behind those other three, although entering the prime of his career in the second year of an offense. So if you're just looking at tackles, DJ Humphreys is the rear again, but that's not the whole line. Now, my rankings matched Pro Football Focus's rankings. I couldn't change it up anyway. And I had the 49ers having the best offensive line as unit, the Cardinals the second best offensive line unit, even though there were all those sacks. Cardinals fans know the narrative. A lot of those were on Kyler, and they pass protected in December quite well overall. Then you got the Rams, and then you've got Seattle's mess. How do you rank them for yourself?
I would say it's probably Trent Williams 1. I know he hasn't played in a year, and so that goes against everything I've talked about, but he was just so good the last time he played for Washington. I guess, oh, that's so tough. The Seattle guy whose name's escaping me right now is, I mean, we're talking about three 30 plus year old left tackles that have all had really good careers.
Dwayne Brown.
Dwayne Brown. I would probably give it to Brown over Whitworth right now. And then, like you said, Humphreys. I think Humphreys is the clear low man on the totem pole in this division. And I don't know if that's necessarily – I mean, obviously, it's never great to have the worst of a position, but I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing when you're looking at the three guys ahead of him. Hopefully – hopefully
he's closing the gap. He's closing the gap. Last year it was obviously. Now he's still obviously, but he's closed the gap because Whitworth took a step back and Humphreys clearly took a step forward.
Correct. And so, I mean, that's the thing. I don't think it's that much of a distinction, but I do think it's fair to say that Humphreys is at the bottom of that group.
Where do you take, who do you like, where do you like the Cardinals in terms of an offensive line unit?
I would, you know, because of the Rams' instability, I think having them second is fair. I mean, there's no question that San Francisco's number one right now. And that doesn't even mean talent-wise. It just means schematic-wise. And then, yeah, I think it would be San Francisco, and then I think you have the Cardinals, then I think you have probably the Rams, and then Seattle. It's just, it's really tough how you do that.
I don't understand how Russell Wilson does what he does and how he continues to put up big numbers in the passing game. Chris Carson continues to put up numbers in the running game, and they seem to have a trash offensive line every year, right? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I mean, again, we talked about how much the Cardinals have invested at the linebacker position, the 49ers at the wide receiver position. I mean, look at how much the Seahawks have invested in the offensive line position with nothing to show for it. Their clear best offensive lineman is a, what, 34? 32?
Who they traded for.
Who they traded for. I mean, yeah, so.
Now, the defensive interior. So, for the Rams and the Cardinals, that's three players. For the Seahawks and the 49ers, it's two players, so they don't run the different fronts. I think it's kind of clear who the number one defensive interior, the defensive tackle in the league, in the division. That's clearly Aaron Donald. Clearly. After that, there's quite a drop-off, and it depends on what you think about Jordan Phillips. If you're doing individual players, I'm not quite sure who I want to put behind him. Jordan Phillips was the big producer last year, but Jaron Reed was 2 years ago, and he kind of had himself a Patrick Peterson-like season after his six-game suspension and really was the same guy that he was before 2018. And in San Francisco, they had the clear number two in DeForest Buckner, but he's no longer with the team. They've got some nice pieces. I mean, they've got a DJ Daniel. They've got some solid players on the interior, but and the Rams, might Michael Brocker still be the number two defensive tackle behind Donald?
Where are we listing Arik Armstead? Is he a defensive end in this case?
I have him listed as an edge guy because that's okay. That's where he ends up lining up now.
Yeah, then I can see a guy like Phillips making a case for the number two. The problem is, I mean, if it's not Arik Armstead, you really have, like you said, you lost DeForest Buckner, and you really have nobody that you actually would fight about after Aaron Donald. I mean, it's such an odd thing to know. I mean, you look at the quarterback, the wide receiver, the tight end, the defensive end, the defensive line, the edge position, and even the off-ball linebacker position. And you're like, oh yeah, we know who's number one at every one of those positions without even thinking about it. And then you go, well, who's number two? And you go, that's a good question. And so I think you make a case for Phillips. I think Brockers is probably still the number two guy. But he plays a lot of edge, too, in their scheme a lot of times. I mean, they run a 34. I don't know what they're going to run this year since Wade Phillips is out. But so, yeah, I think you're right for now. For now, I don't know who you would put above Rockers consistently.
And then if you're looking at defensive line interior units, obviously the Rams at the top. Who do you like next in terms of a unit? I'm torn schematically for the 49ers. Their strength is their edge, and so they don't need great production on the inside. The Seattle defensive line was just not good last year. I mean, they've got some talent there with Jaron Reed and Puna Ford and a couple other guys, but and then the Cardinals, you got Jordan Phillips and Corey Peters, and then you add in a Zach Allen or Jonathan Bullard. Who do you like after the Rams interior next?
I would probably put the 49ers there simply because you don't have to ask as much from them, if that makes sense. And then I think it's a coin flip of Seattle and Arizona. I mean, you talked about Jaron Reed is a nice guy. Puna Ford isn't a bad player. So, but then you kind of get into their depth, and it's, you could pay me and I couldn't name you their depth guys, honestly. Now I cover the Cardinals, but I've heard of these depth guys from San Francisco and LA. You know, I've heard of Solomon Thomas. I've heard of Javon Kinlaw, who they're expecting to start. I've heard of DJ Jones, you know. So I would probably put Arizona just because I like their top four on the interior more than I like Seattle's top four, if that makes sense.
Right. That makes sense. Coming up next on the Riders of Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, let's move to the next part. So we're going to talk edge and off-ball linebackers. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The pass rushers, the edge rushers. Whoo, there's some good ones in this division. Yeah, I ranked them individually on Wednesday in an article for Cards Wire. I'm going to stump for my man, Chandler Jones. I know Nick Bosa is on his heels. He's a good against the run. He's not the best at the run, but no one has had more sacks since he came into the league. No one has had more sacks since he was traded to the Cardinals. In fact, if he has 13 sacks this year, it'll be the fourth straight year that he's had at least 13. The only other guy to do that, Reggie White. Chandler Jones is my number one, but then I look at what you've got in the rest of the division, and I kind of think that the 49ers have the next three top pass rushers in Nick Bosa and D Ford and Eric Armstead. I have D Ford ahead of Armstead because he's done it for longer, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I think it's Chandler Jones, and then I think it's Nick Bosa. Bosa's such a unique talent. It's hard to overstate how good he is, and it's just starting. It's crazy. Seattle hasn't signed Jadeveon Clowney yet, so their edge defenders are just,
they're not good.
I think it's Jones, and I think it would be Bosa, Armstead, and probably D Ford after that. And then you would go, I mean, maybe Kennard, or
I'd have Kennard ahead of, because he's, you know, and he's got better production as when sacks, and that's when playing really an off ball position for the last several years. And now I'd like Kennard's going to be playing what I believe is his perfect position. He was a pass rusher in college and in high school. He's built for the edge position. He's strong against the run. I really, really like, and I think he's got double-digit potential in terms of sacks this year.
So no, I agree. I think it's a good fit, and I'm excited to see how it works out. So, I just, I mean, LJ Collier, Bruce Irvin doesn't do anything for me, and Samson Ekubom, and who's the other guy?
Leonard Floyd they added, but he hasn't been done much since the 7 sacks his rookie year, and then there's Ogbubinya something, I can't pronounce his name.
Yeah, so again, I mean, people I wouldn't be able to tell you about if you paid me. So it's a tough group. I mean, it really is a tough group because you have your top three, and then you kind of just, I mean, after that, you just kind of shrug your shoulders.
So moving on to the off-ball guys, as units, whose linebacker units do you like the best?
It's tough because I don't know how good Jordan Brooks is going to be. But Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are so good in Seattle that it almost makes me like them more than San Francisco's trio of Quan Alexander, Fred Warner, and Drake Greenlaw, who were unbelievable to watch last year. It's a really tough question. I respect Wagner so much that I'll probably give the nod to Seattle, but that's just because Wagner is, I mean, he's the best.
He's amazing, right.
So.
And then looking at the Rams, if you look at where the Cardinals were a year ago or the last couple of years at linebacker, at the off-the-ball position, that's kind of where the Rams are this year because they've got Micah Kizer and a couple of guys you've never heard of. And the Cardinals, you know, Jordan Hicks had himself a fine season production-wise. They added Devondre Campbell, and they added Isaiah Simmons. So for two spots, they have three talented players, and they believe that the issues and coverage that they have are taken care of between Campbell and Simmons. So we'll see how that goes. But that's a promising young group. Obviously, they're definitely way behind Seattle's and San Francisco's, but I think they are much better than LA's situation.
And that's, I was going to say that. I mean, when you look at LA's situation, Terrell Lewis is going to be a rookie, obviously. I honestly don't know who Micah Kizer is. I'm not even going to lie. I'm looking right now.
I think he was a day three guy a couple of years ago.
Yeah. 6 feet, 238 pounds. Virginia.
He looks like a Vance Joseph. He looks like a Joe Walker type player.
And then Leonard Floyd has been a bust. So, I mean, that's just a bad group. They don't have a Corey. They don't have a Corey Littleton to kind of bring them up. Because I mean, if you put Corey Littleton and take out Kizer or Lewis, I mean, you're probably going to give the nod to LA over Arizona because Littleton is better than Hicks, but I think Hicks is clearly out of those two teams the best linebacker. And then you have, I would say, Devondre Campbell's probably the second best linebacker out of that group.
Right.
And I would probably say that Isaiah Simmons is the third best linebacker out of that group. Like, that's just, that's a bad linebacker group for the Rams, which is crazy to think from where they were 2 years ago.
Right. And so that's what they've got, a really strong defensive front, like their defensive line, but their edge and their off-ball guys that's not ideal. And they've got the cover guys in the back end because the middle of that defense is questionable at best.
Yeah. And so, I mean, when you rank the linebackers, it's Bobby Wagner, but I mean, I think Fred Warner's the second best linebacker in the division now. Yeah. What are
I mean that so that that's they've there's five such good linebackers there at the top. When you've got Wagner, you've got KJ Wright, Quan Alexander, Dre Greenlaw, and Fred Warner. All five of those are great. I think I'd go Wagner, Warner, Alexander, Greenlaw, Wright, because I think Wright is fake.
He's just getting old. Yeah, I was going to say he's getting old, and I mean he's played so many snaps. And Alexander probably is the second best if he could ever stay healthy.
Right.
But I mean, he's literally, I mean, he's similar to the guy the Cardinals had is escaping my mind that, I mean, just had a different injury, Troy Nicholas. I mean, obviously he's produced more than Troy ever did, but, you know, where it's not the same injury every single time. It's a different body part. And you're like, dude, are you just not built to play in the NFL? Like, you're just so talented, but you can – I mean, he played 12 games. He played one 16-game season, 12, 6, 8. I mean, it's just – it's crazy to look at those numbers and see what he's done. And then you go, he's played basically three seasons in his five in his career. And I mean, if he could just stay healthy. But – Greenlaw showed a lot last year, and you know, kind of Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner are the kind of reasons that you and I, not that we've ever been anti Isaiah Simmons, but why you and I are like, no, you don't have to take a guy with the eighth overall pick. Like, you can get a Fred Warner in the third round. You can get a Dre Greenlaw in the fifth round, but it just, I mean, doesn't seem to be something that the Cardinals have found consistently. Yeah,
nope.
So I guess you take what you get. And so, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing is when you look at the top two groups for that position, it's kind of like the top two groups for the edge rushing position. I mean, you put the first guy first and then the next guy is a rising star that's nipping on the heels of the top guy. And then the next three guys after that play for the same two teams. And
that's so...
it's the same thing as the edge position. I mean, you have Chandler Jones and then you have Bosa, Armstead, Ford and Kennard. And then you have Wagner and then you have Warner, Greenlaw, Wright, Alexander. And that explains why when we talk about at the beginning, like, oh, San Francisco is the top team. I mean, we've talked about San Francisco at every positional group being either one or two. That's how you build a team that you're talking about, you know, as being the best in a conference or maybe in the NFL, not just, you know, the best in their division.
Cut on next to the Rise and Secret podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to the last section. We're going to talk about the defensive backs and the coaching. That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. If we're talking about cornerback units, that's an interesting one if you want to look at kind of trios. San Francisco's got Richard Sherman, you've got Emmanuel Mosley, and then Kawan Williams in the slot. Cardinals, we know you've got Patrick Peterson, Robert Alford, Byron Murphy, the Rams go Jalen Ramsey, Troy Hill, and I can't remember who plays in the nickel in Seattle. They're changing their nickel. I think Ugo Amadi is going to be playing there in the slot. And then you've got, obviously, Shaquille Griffin. And honestly, I can't think of the other cornerback that they have off the top of my head. That's a team I haven't looked at, the position I haven't looked at. But of those units, who do you like the best of those units, if you're talking about outs, border and slot?
It's always tough to, you know, distinguish when you look at a guy, you know, like Richard Sherman, who's still playing at a high level, all pro obviously last year, but then you look at who's around him, you know, Jimmy Ward, they're listing as a free safety. So, okay. So we're saying Kawan Williams and, Akilah Witherspoon, or are we talking about Jason Verrett, who's Jason Verrett might be the most talented corner in all of the division, but again, kind of like Quan Alexander, literally never healthy. I mean, never. You look at the Arizona, they still have Patrick Peterson, who, if he plays 16 games like he did the last four games, could be pushing for an all-pro status again. You've got Robert Alford coming off an injury, so you really have no idea what you're getting in the 32-year-old corner, I believe. And Byron Murphy struggled last year. I mean, he just flat out did. It is what it is. That's what happens. But he's getting to play the slot cornerback, which is the position he, you know, the Cardinals envisioned for him when they drafted him. So when you just take all of that into consideration, I didn't even mention, you know, the Rams who have Jalen Ramsey and then, you know, some guys. Troy Hill's not a bad corner. I shouldn't disrespect him. But, I mean, it's just they lost LaMarcus Joyner. They obviously traded Peters last year. They don't have the talent that they did a couple years ago. And then Seattle, I mean, I just don't know what they're doing. Not that Shaquille Griffin isn't a bad player. Trey Flowers wasn't bad. Amadi's fine. You know, they throw in Dunbar, and I think that's really it. But I would say you've got – I think I would give it to San Francisco and then go Arizona. But I think those are – from a talent perspective, I think those are the clear top two when you're just talking about one through three.
Right. But, you know, the top guys, do you go with Ramsey and his physical ability? Do you go with Sherman? Do you go with you can't go with Peterson this year after what he did last year. But it's a talented group, but my 49ers guy said that the back end isn't as good as their defense made them look, because they got so good. Because they had so much pass rush.
Well, and that's the hard part, is you have Richard Sherman, who's coming off an all-pro season. So are you really going to rank, even though Jalen Ramsey is insanely talented? I mean, and I think you and I would probably take Ramsey now ahead of Sherman. I mean, are we really going to bet against Richard Sherman, who's been bet against his entire career and always come out on top, it seems like? All that being said, I would probably go Ramsey, Sherman, Peterson for the group.
Yeah, that's completely reasonable. And, you know, Alford, what's really kind of interesting is that we haven't seen it, but it tells you the type of career he's had. Alford was just named to the Falcons All-Decade Team.
Yeah, and he's a talented player, and that's been the frustrating thing, is like we've talked about with the other guys. I guess the biggest difference is Alford's kind of older now. I mean, he was older when they signed him, and that was the question you and I had last year when they signed him, is like, why are we signing a guy that's that age to this contract that hasn't been healthy in so many years? And so, but I mean, from a talent standpoint, he's shown that he can play. So, I mean, you have to just hope that he can at least get on the field and show if he even has anything left.
Now, the safeties, we've got some pretty good ones. Seattle, they got better later in the year with the addition of Quandre Diggs, but you've got Jimmy Ward, who's consistently, and then you've got the other players in San Francisco. They kind of plug and play there. Buda Baker, you've got. Who do you like best of all the safeties in the division, and whose safety group do you like the most?
The safety group just does a lot of different things, and they're asked to do different things. I mean, you look at, obviously, Buda Baker. He's done well in Arizona. But Los Angeles has a really talented guy in Johnny Johnson, that's you know, played really well. San Francisco has two talented guys that are just completely opposite ends of how they play, in Jaquiski Tartt and Jimmy Ward. And then Seattle even has some talent. I would think that Seattle's safety group is probably at the bottom. I would probably put the Cardinals at three because of Jalen Thompson right now. Like, you'd just like to see a full 16 games of him playing at that level. And for that matter, I think you'd want to see a full 16 games of Buda Baker playing at the level he played at the last, what, 8 to 10 games of last season, where he was one of the better safeties in the NFL. I think I would give the two spot to the Rams with Johnson and Taylor Rapp. Rapp's really had a good career against the Cardinals, so
yes,
maybe that's
he has.
Maybe that's my bias coming in there. and I think Tartt and Ward are the two, you know, kind of what every team aspires to have in that kind of big enforcer and little kind of gadget guy that can do a little bit of everything really, really well. And so, I think that's how I'd rank them. But when it comes to individual players, oh man, it's like picking ice cream. Like, what's your favorite flavor? That's what it comes down to.
Coaching. If we're looking at head coaches, we've got three Super Bowl coaches. One has a title. Shanahan just took his. Pete Carroll's been to a couple Super Bowls. He got a championship. Shanahan's taken his team to the Super Bowl. Sean McVay has. And then he left with Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, with that sort of coaching group, I think all you have to do is say that Kingsbury's just not there yet. We love what he's done, and we like his potential, but he's got to be number four because guess what? We have all three of those other coaches have taken their teams to the Super Bowl in the last several years.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the coaching staffs to kind of add on to that, and I would say that you have San Francisco at the top in terms of staff, but I mean, you probably put Pete Carroll at the top because of the consistency. I mean, it's so tough to rank those two because
right.
You don't want to penalize Shanahan for being great for the most recent, but how do you penalize Pete Carroll for being, you know, one of the best coaches in the NFL for the past decade.
I mean, I think I'm going to put Carroll at the top still simply because he consistently, and even though, like you pointed this, offensively, they have, we look at it and say they've got a bad offensive line, yet Russell Wilson's one of the best passers in the league. They have one of the best rushing attacks in the league. So clearly he's doing something right. Shanahan and what you've done for me lately, Shanahan, he's trending. I think I want to put him above McVay now because he's trending up while McVay, after 2 years of just fantastic, looks like his team's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and that's the hard. And we're talking about the guy that was in the Super Bowl two seasons ago being the third best coach in the division. Like, it's absurd, is it not? Like, but that's how talented this division is, and that's the hard part when you look at it from that point of view. When you look at it from the Cardinals slant, is that you talked about at the beginning, you want to have faith, you want to believe that things are going in the right direction, and then you kind of piece it out and you kind of have the conversation about, well, you're talking about two of the best coaches, not just in the NFC, but in the NFL. Oh, and then you throw in Sean McVay, who just happens to be a great coach too. And so you're like, so you're not going to get any coaching advantages, but Cliff Kingsbury's shown that he's a force to be reckoned with in terms of offensive game planning and scheming and the ability to create a chance for his offenses to be successful. And so you look at it from that perspective. I think it goes Carroll, Shanahan, McVay, Kingsbury. And I think in the coaching staff rankings, you probably flip that and go 49ers, Seahawks. And then I would think the Rams still have the slight advantage because, one, they were better than the Cardinals last year, and two, you're talking about just 2 years removed. I know Wade Phillips and some of his staff is gone, and I know that the guy that's in Cincy right now was a part of the offensive staff for the Bengals. But at the same time, you're talking about guys that in the Rams and Sean McVay and his crew that have actually done it, and we're waiting to see the Cardinals do it. So I think not because you don't have faith or believe in them, but just because you want to see it on the field before you start to throw around that they are better than teams that have been in the Super Bowl recently or won a Super Bowl.
And that's obviously the way you have to go. The NFC West, it just tells you just how good a division this is between the coaching. Kingsbury is trending in the right direction. He did what he needed to do with the offense, and I think we're going to see the completion of that offense. We see him, the players buy into what he did. He can handle the NFL level and the personnel. It's different than what Steve Wilkes had, but the entire division has quality coaches. They have quality quarterbacks, great receivers. They have really good running backs across the board. This is a team that's got this is a division that's got talent across the board, like high end talent. I haven't done this with other divisions, but if you look at it, you've got four good quarterbacks, you've got four good coaches, you've got some of the top players at their position. It's just an incredibly competitive division, and it's fun to be a part of, and at the same time frustrating because the Cardinals look like they're going to be good. Like, they could win 9 games and not make the playoffs and be in last place.
Well, and we didn't,
be a 9-win last place team.
Well, and we didn't even talk about this, but with the expanded division, we could see all four teams in the NFC West make the playoffs, which would
hard because they beat up on each other. But if they dominate outside of the division, it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, if every team finds a way to go 3-3 in the division, and then you have, then you have a bunch of teams going 13-3 to 10-6. I mean, that would probably get you all four in the division. It's unlikely, like you said. It's unlikely. It's improbable, but not impossible. If any division is going to do it, you would expect it to be the NFC West.
It'll be fantastic. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise FC Red Podcast, episode 270. Next week, we will record our training camp preview, unless something bad happens and training camp doesn't start. They're set to report on the 28th. We will, but practice is not going to happen, so we can go ahead and do our preview, the camp battles, roster ideas, players to watch, bubble players, all that. That's coming next on the right. That's coming on the next edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast. Until then, that's Seth Cox from The Edge of the Birds. I'm Jess Root for Cards Wire. Thanks for listening, and go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.